You're listening to Radio Aryan at RadioAryan.com.
Hello and welcome to Truthful Out Radio. Today's date is Friday, the 27th of April, 2018. You're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, broadcasting at Radio Aryan. And of course, I am joined by Mr. Dennis Wise, the producer of Adolf Hitler, The Greatest Story Never Told, Communism by the Back Door, and the Freemasonic Victors of World War II. Dennis, how are you doing today?
I'm doing fine. The three documentaries you just mentioned, I feel, are must-viewing documentaries for people who really want to know what's going on. Because even I've been fascinated by making them.
Yeah, you know, I bet. I mean, yeah, as you say, they really are must-see documentaries. I notice you've been putting some clips up from Communism by the Back Door at your channel recently. Are they new clips? Are they parts from Communism by the Back Door? What's the thinking behind that?
Okay, well, everybody knows how popular The Greatest Story Never Told was, and for good reason. Communism by the Back Door was to explain after World War II where we are, how we got there, and who put us here. Consequently, it's not caught the imagination the same as what Real Story, but then again, it never was going to do because World War II is such an iconic subject. So what I intend doing is just putting little snippets up to not only to educate people who haven't seen the documentary, but to obviously promote the documentary as well. So I called it How the World Was Fooled, and I'll put maybe three, four minutes up because people haven't, you know, not everybody has a lot of time to even watch a 15-minute video. So that was the thinking behind that. And consequently, you know, people are loving it.
Yeah, it's quite useful having, you know, short clips, 5 minutes, 6 minutes, just, you know, there's a lot of information in the normal 15-minute chapters that you do. It's a lot to take in, isn't it?
A lot to take in. And not everybody can take it in first-time viewing. For various reasons, you know.
Yeah, well, people have a short attention span nowadays. I mean, we used to reading long books and watching films, yeah. And people today are brought up with YouTube and 5 minute clips and web pages.
Yeah,
a short attention span. So you have to tailor the information to the target audience, I guess. I mean, and that's what it is. It's propaganda for the truth, isn't it?
Yeah, I suppose you could call it that. Yeah, and if anybody does want to go any further, then they've got the documentary to go either online or they can buy it. Same with The Great Story Never Told. People say to me, "Oh, I'm having trouble red-pilling people." Well, you will until people actually want to investigate for themselves. That's the time to show them, really. Other than that, you know, they've got too much to do, got too many worries. You know, the mindset isn't ready for it.
Yeah, people very rarely get swayed by argument. They find things out for themselves when they research them for themselves. Mm. And that's the point of doing it. And I dare say that Adolf Hitler, The Greatest Story Never Told, I mean, it's in a class of its own, really. I mean, that's woken so many people up.
I mean, obviously, you know, I was pleased that I had the ability to put out a documentary which has had such an effect. And like recent arguments on YouTube with pagans and other people, where they're starting to kind of dismiss just what that took. I mean, if people can realise that, particularly that time, to actually praise Hitler in any form was looked on and frowned on as evil. But if you yourself probably noticed over the last couple of years, comments on YouTube, even on things like the Holocaust and things like that, people are putting comments up there and they're just not having it. You know, the world is waking up, albeit slowly.
Yeah, there's certainly change in the air. And some of these arguments, Christian pagan arguments, we're going to be going into today. We've got a few questions and comments from from the last episode of Freemasonic Victors and also from the two most recent clips that you've put up from Communism by the Back Door. What's the title that you're using for those new clips again?
How the World Was Fooled.
Yeah, good title. Okay, the first one that we've got comes from Josh Gilbert. And his one, actually, it breaks up into a few different questions, so I'll break it up into those. He says, Dennis, if you are a Christian, can you please explain to me how people like Laurie Cardoza Moore and John Haggie, who preach Jesus Christ is the only way, are actually corrupt, counterfeit Christians? I am so lost when it comes to the truth about who the false Jews are and the current state of Israel with end times prophecy. I've been trying to figure this out for years. So I guess we can break that down into what are your views on John Haggie and the evangelical preachers, and how is it that they are corrupting counterfeit Christians?
Well, you'll notice that all these preachers, they're all multimillionaires. They're feeding off the Zionist Jewish message. Tell Christians that what they're doing is right and it's in the Bible, and they're getting well paid for it as well. So at the end of the day, these Christian Zionists, not only do they cause, like this guy, he can't work things out, but when I mention Christianity, I'm talking specifically about European Christianity and, you know, the type of Christianity that Hungary today are shutting the borders for. Not this Americanized Zionist Jewish Christianity, which they have over there. A lot of pagans have jumped on and accused me of promoting because I'm a Christian. But I'm not one of those Christians. There's a difference, and the Jews have done it again. You know, they've intermingled everything, and people get confused. So even I don't know if I'm talking. I might be talking to another Christian, but on YouTube, I don't even know if he's one of these evangelists. That's how confusing it is. But I specifically, not that I try and convert anybody, I just say that this is what Hitler was fighting to save, European Christianity and European culture, the exact same what Hungary is saying today, no more immigrants.
Well, this is something I come across as well. You know, you get accused of trying to convert people. You're not. You're just trying to point out facts of history and ways that we've been lied to. You know, people have to come to their own eventual understanding of things. If they're searching for the truth, then they are eventually going to come across this if they are genuinely searching for the truth. But the second part of this, where he says that he's getting lost about who the false Jews are, the current state of Israel, he's been trying to figure this out for years. Well, the Jews are not the descendants of the Israelites of the Bible. They mixed in with Canaanites 200 years before Christ, and they mixed in with Khazars 1,000 years after Christ, and then they mixed in with Europeans. They've also interbred with Negroes. We've got Ethiopian Jews. So they're nothing to do with the original Hebrews of the Bible. And Israel itself is the church, and that has always been the church's stand on this. They said that all the prophecies in the Old Testament to do with Israel, they are talking about the church. The modern church are the receivers of those covenants, promises and prophecies. And that was the way right up until last century. And you can check old Bibles and it will talk about building New Jerusalem in Britain and how the church is Israel. And then in the last century, the Jews took over Palestine and started calling it Israel. And that's where the confusion came in. And now people think that Israel means this country in the Middle East, whereas for the last 1900 years, it's meant the Christian church. It's meant the people in the Christian church. So prophecies that are about Israel are about the Christian church. They're not about the Jews. You know, you can say that prophecies about Esau and Edom in the Bible are prophecies about the Jews because that's who they are descended from. And you can check that out on Wikipedia. If you look up Edomia, it will tell you that these Edomians interbred with the tribe of Judah in 200 BC. And it will also tell you who Esau Edom was and that he married Canaanite wives. So, you know, this is an open secret, as it were. It's also in the Jews' own encyclopedia that Esau Edom merged with Judah, and that's who is the ancestor of the modern day Jews. People don't want to, you know, I don't really understand it. Some people just don't want to accept it for some reason, but it is historical fact, and it is borne out by what the historian said at the time. The next bit of this, He says, what about the fact that Israel used to be a desert and now it is blooming, according to Bible prophecy? Well, again, this is the same thing. It says in the Old Testament, Esau will go back to where he lived before. He'll go back to his desert places and he will rebuild them, and then God will destroy them. Now, that's the verse, I think, that's talking about the Jews. And they're not mentioned in anything else, really, are they? And he says, what about all the wars surrounding the Middle East? These have to be signs of the end times. No? So what do you think about the wars in the Middle East, Dennis?
Well, it's just a sign of Israel trying to create the Greater Israel plan. Nothing, nothing to do with the Bible. It's just that, well, they say that God said that they were allowed all this land right up to the Euphrates. This is what the Israeli flag's all about. But there's always going to be unrest with these people around, because chaos is how they live. They keep everybody off balance with chaos. Life is just chaos every day.
I think they just use it as an excuse. I mean, they know they're not ethnically descended from the Israelites, and yet they use the excuse that they are something to do with the Old Testament to claim that they want all this land and to cause all this trouble. Yeah, you're quite right. That's the cause of it. They think that they should have Syria and parts of Egypt and parts of Jordan and the whole area. They think Jews should have, because they
and then rule the world at the same time.
Yeah, I mean, it makes it quite clear in the Old Testament that they were kicked out of those lands, and at the time they were kicked out, they only had a small portion anyway. If you go back to the time of Solomon, I mean, his empire stretched all the way out to Palmyra, but that was the 12 tribes of Israel, and it was only the tribe of Judah that came back from Babylon. The rest all dispersed. The church says that they just disappeared. Christian identity says that they became Europeans. And, you can pick either one of those. But either way, the modern day Jews are nothing to do with the original Hebrews. So when they claim that all this land is theirs, they're just making that up. They're just trying to cause trouble. It's just a land grab. They're not happy with just having that they already have. They want everything. We know that.
With, the world. Yeah,
we know that with international Zionism. Well, he also asked you about Pastor Stephen Anderson and the Marching to Zion documentary. He says, is this not propaganda? Stephen Anderson cannot be a real Christian. So what are your views on Stephen Anderson and the Marching to Zion documentary, Dennis?
Well, on some things I do agree with him. I mean, he's not a great lover of Hitler and the Nazis. He has watched the documentary, I believe, The Greatest Story, like I've watched his. And he actually says he doesn't believe there was a Holocaust, even though he doesn't agree with what Hitler and the Nazis were doing. So on that point, I agree with him. And on several others, in the documentary, the common denominator, see, he's talking to these rabbis, and these rabbis are not understanding just why this documentary has been recorded. And so they're quite open up to him. And it's quite obvious to anybody watching it that their God is not our God. Their God is Lucifer.
Yeah, I have to agree with him in some parts. I think the Marching to Zion documentary was quite good. I mean, it woke people up to the Jewish problem. Obviously, he is anti-national socialism, so we can't agree with all of his platforms.
No.
I think generally.
He's a turn on homosexuality, though.
Yeah, I mean, he speaks out against that. He's been banned from Britain, quite a few countries in Europe. And, if you're
South Africa,
if you're a white man and you're banned from entering Europe, then usually,
you've got to be safe
somewhere. You're pretty good. Usually means you're a good
agreed.
Man.
Yeah.
Well, the next one is from Josh Gilbert. He says, so when the Bible says that the whole world will come against Jerusalem and all these Jews that are coming back to Israel, is that all a lie? Well, again, this comes down to, the Jews are not the people of the Bible. That's not what it's talking about. I think what he's talking about here, it talks about the camp of the saints, and it says that all the nations and all tongues will surround the camp of the saints. And it says that all these nations and tongues come from the serpent's mouth. And the camp of the saints, I think, is Europe. It's white people. It's the white race. And all these nations and tongues that are coming against them to flood, the woman and child away, that's these foreign nations. It also says the armies of Gog and Magog will come against them. And Gog and Magog, that area where Gog and Magog were, is Turkey and Syria, which is where all the refugees are flooding in from. So it depends which way you interpret it. And if you have a modern day interpretation that the Jews are Israel, then you will think that, it's all the rest of the world going after the Jews. But if you actually look into it and realize that these Jews aren't actually Israel, the church is Israel, then you will understand that it's Christendom that's being surrounded by these other races. And that's exactly what we see happening. Europe is being invaded.
That's exactly what we see.
Yeah. The place is being invaded. We're being replaced. That's what white genocide is. And it's all predicted to happen in the Bible if you go along with the original church understanding of it, really.
Yeah, can I just say that when anybody tries to impersonate anybody else, you know what I mean, like the Jews are doing, it's always going to be a problem. It's always going to be something on the horizon which is going to cause friction. It's just how the land lays when you're trying to be somebody you're not, if you get the point.
Well, we know they're expert impersonators, aren't they? They like to take on Anglo-Saxon names and pretend to be white. You know, this is why...
Downbeaten.
This is why they were forced to wear clothing to identify them. You know, they used to have to wear pointy hats to identify them so that the people around them were aware that these people were not the same as them. And
that's the reason why the Roman Catholic Church grew in ghettos. The original teachings, you know, not this satanic lot today, and that's the same church that Hitler was defending and all the other countries in Europe, which everybody outside Europe was unaware of.
Well, again, this is why they wore the Jewish star. It was so that they could be identified. And partly it was so in case they were attacked, then the German police, you know, knew who was the one to protect, which was the Jew. You know, it was actually of benefit to them. And when you mentioned there, Dennis, that the church put them in separate areas, again, that is treating them very well. I mean, the church said... Well,
saving them a lot of problems.
Yeah, the church said, well, you know, you're not Christian, you're not us, but we will tolerate you living here and we will tolerate you following your own laws. Because the church thought that they were following the Old Testament, they didn't understand that they were following the Talmud until, you know, the second millennium. So they said, well, you can have your own areas, which we'll call beyond the pale, which is where we get the term beyond the pale for something that is, you know, far too immoral to countenance. But we said, you can live in this area and you can follow your laws, but you must be kept separate from the Christians because we don't want you to corrupt them. You know, that's treating them really well. Instead of saying, we don't want you here because you have laws different to ours and you are not of our people, they said, okay, we'll tolerate you. We'll let you live there and follow your own laws.
Yeah, to somebody who doesn't know about the Jew, though, believe you me, there's still people say to me, what have the Jews ever done to you? In comments on YouTube. if somebody doesn't know what the Jew is all about, it looks cruel and you know, making them downtrodden and you know, it's like they're being kept in their own areas in a prison. But they don't understand just what it's, well, we know now, once they've been let out into the whole wide world, we see what they do. And this is what they tried before and they were corralled for.
Well, all we're asking for now is areas of our own with our own people in, where we can, you know, have our own customs and traditions and not have to live among other people.
They're not that charitable.
that's what was done for the Jews. They were given their own area. You know, we've even given them their own homeland and look at the way they've behaved, and they refused to move to their own homeland. You know, they would rather live in amongst the white nations where they can parasite from us and profit from us. Moving on to the next one, and this is Investigator. He says, why do white people attack Black Lives Matter while it is known that the American police are Freemasons? Look at their badges and you will notice Freemasonic insignia. And I think this covers two things. It's why do we criticize Black Lives Matter when they are going against the police and we know that the police are corrupt? And also the Freemasonic insignia thing, Dennis. I guess you can answer both of them or one at a time if you like.
Well, first, what he says about why do white people attack Black Lives Matter. the thing what this guy didn't understand, the investigator, was that all these black revolutionary outfits, as proven by Michael E. Jones, is all funded by the Jews. That goes back even before the Black Panthers. Forgot the name of the organisation there, but turn of the century, they were being funded. The Black Panthers were being funded. I think there were £1 million given to the Blackstone organisation, which was kind of a revolutionary Black Panther unit. I mean, $1 million, sorry. I mean, it's a lot of money in them days, in the 70s, and all funded by Jews to create this split in society, to cause, again, all this chaos. And use the blacks, just like they're using the Muslims in Europe now. And they use these people because they've got this wealth, and a lot of people obviously need the money, and they fall to the 30 pieces of silver routine. And so they fund it all, and people, one, a lot of people know this, but two, the fact that this Black Lives Matter alienates everybody, as if white lives don't matter. And consequently, you know, all lives matter in a way, but when you're under the shots that we're under at the moment, then white lives matter even more.
Yeah, it implies that only black lives are any importance. And George Soros is the guy that's funding this. Yeah. Maybe it was the American Civil Liberties Union that you were thinking about there. Because it's known that what these Jews would do, they would set up all these black civil rights organizations, and it would be Jews that were running it all. And they would have Jews even speaking for these Negroes. They wouldn't actually let them speak for themselves, because they knew that they weren't capable of doing that until the time of Martin Luther King. And then they put Martin Luther King up the front, and he was a communist. But Black Lives Matter, the whole premise that it rests on is false, that, you know, that black people are being killed because of racism, and more blacks are being killed than whites. You know, more white people are killed by police than black people are killed by police, and yet blacks commit 10 times as many crimes. It's not because of racism, it's because they commit more crimes, and they are far more likely to fire on the police. It's like saying, you know, why do you protect yourself against a dangerous wild animal, and you're not protecting yourself against domesticated sheep? It's because the dangerous wild animal is dangerous and presents a threat, and domesticated sheep don't. You know, it's yeah, really basic, yeah. Really basic. But what about the Freemasonic insignia, Dennis? What do you know about that?
Well, we know even police in this country deep into Freemasonry. England's run by Freemasonry, as is the US, since the Fed was taken and control was taken over by the City of London. I mean, America's just a proxy of the Rothschilds, just like the Soviet Union was in the World War II, just another proxy. So apparently all these organizations which hold the power or protect the power structure of these nations are Freemasons.
And not all Freemasons are bad either, you know. It's only certain ones.
Some don't realize what it's all about, really.
And also what you've got here is you've got a case where it's blacks going against whites, and racial loyalties have to come first, regardless of things like, oh well, some of the police might be Freemasons. It's blacks going against white people. That's at the heart of it. So, you know, you have to support the white people. Whether they, you know, we know that the police are misguided. They're carrying out, laws which are anti-white and go against white people. But we have to have a police force to keep law and order. And the police have to do as they're told. They have to keep discipline. Otherwise, they won't be effective. And we won't have an effective police force. We'll have a police force like the ones in Africa, which are completely ineffective and just work on bribes. In fact, most of the third world is full of police that work on bribes. You know, we can't have that. What we need to do is change the people at the top that are giving out the instructions to the police. They're the ones to blame.
Yeah, one of the best interviews I've ever seen, and it just happened to come on by chance. I was watching a video today, and I actually used it in The Greatest Story Never Told, was the Parkinson Show with Muhammad Ali, when for the first time I'd ever heard a black man actually talking about not wanting a race mix. And he was saying that, you know, the bluebirds fly with bluebirds, eagles fly with eagles. you know, you've got to love your own. And Parkinson was giving it, you know, the typical Marxist, you know, well, you know, I don't think that's right. And then Ali turns around to him and says, well, I don't, you know, no right thinking white man wants the children to be half brown with kinky hair curls in. You know, they want, everyone wants the children to look like them. And I just thought it was brilliant how we put that over to show that it's not a white racist thing. You know, people of each nationality, like it was said, should bring themselves up to the best of their ability, whatever the nation. And by doing that, you keep to your own, which is exactly what Muhammad Ali was preaching.
Yeah, it's a very good clip, that. I think a good analogy can be made with whales. I mean, you have humpback whales, you have sperm whales, killer whales, blue whales, minke whales, yeah. And they're all whales, but they don't interbreed with one another. And that's what the races of humanity are like. We are separate subspecies of a kind. We're separate kinds, even. I mean, you wouldn't say, you would say that a blue whale is a different kind to a sperm whale. And yet they are all whales. So that, you know, I think whales are a good analogy to use.
I just remember a line he used. He said something about like when a Chinese man marries a Hispanic woman or something like that. I said, there's just no way they're going to get on because the guy wants to listen to Chinese music and she wants to listen to Hispanic music. You know, it's never going to be settled. And he's right.
And anything that's born from a union like that is going to be very confused.
All over the place.
You know, it's a very old phrase that says that a dog cannot know two masters. And what you've got there in a mixed breed is somebody with, you know, a genetic predisposition to go in two opposite directions. You know, racial schizophrenia even. So
it messes the mind, doesn't it? And the mind controls the body. So you've got one messed up person.
It's a tragedy when these things happen. Well, moving on to the next subject, and this has been brought up by quite a lot of people, actually, and that's the mention of the Necronomicon. In your last video, Dennis, I mean, some people are saying that this book was invented by H.P. Lovecraft, and others are saying it exists, and some people are saying, why is it in the video? So what are your thoughts on the Necronomicon, and why did you put it in there, Dennis?
Well, I first came across the book when I did Communism by the Back Door, because what's he called there? The Australian mogul.
Sarion, Michael Sarion?
No, he's a Jew, on the Council for Foreign Relations, but he's Australian. Owns, oh God, my mind's gone blank on him. But anyway, he owns The Sun and The Times and Murdoch.
Gotcha.
Rupert Murdoch. He was trying to come across as a Christian, but I think it's his mother who was a Jew. And he's a Jew, and he's a Rothschild, and he funds a lot of these things, and he even got his American citizenship so he could sit on the Council for Foreign Affairs, and make decisions with all these other New World Order guys. And this is, I think at university was known as Red Rupert, because he's a communist. Even though he's wealthy, people can't understand it. But anyway, he was coming across to be a Christian, and this is where I first saw the book, where he was selling satanic books in his many outlets, and one of them was this particular book. Anyway, when I was researching John Dee, I went to various sources. I can't remember which one it was now. I even went to his website today, the John Dee Society, and they listed a number of things. And in all this research when I did, I came across that he was an expert in necromancy. So, obviously, I put it in. So somebody's come on and said in this comment, one of them says, like, oh, you know, I've always stood by you, you know, and your resources, but you need to sort this one out, otherwise you're going to get slaughtered. So it didn't take me long to find a PDF written by John Dee on the subject. And, you know, I sent him the link. There you go. Have a look.
Well, I also had a look at this, and obviously H.P. Lovecraft spoke about it, but it seems to have a history before then. Apparently it was written by some Arab in the 8th century.
Yeah, a bad Arab or something.
Yeah, and And then it got rediscovered by John Dee. I know there wasn't much Arabic writing at that time, but the idea that there was ways to summon up demons and angels, I mean, that goes back millennia, that people have been summoning up demons and thinking they're angels and talking to them. Yeah. And John Dee was a collector of all these occult works, and he would have had he would have had these books that aren't publicly available, and you know, this would have been one. Maybe he called it the Necronomicon. You know, it's the Book of Dead Names, basically. And
yeah,
the,
that's right.
You know, the Egyptian Book of the Dead is calling forth by day, and it's basically, again, it's calling on these names. The Book of the Dead actually is, and this is the Book of Dead Names, so it's a book of calling on angels, demons, names, fallen angels,
he
names.
He spent a whole lifetime doing that, didn't he? So he would be an expert.
I think people get it from where people get the confusion is because H.P. Lovecraft wrote about it in, in one of his fictions. But it does get mentioned before then. And, you know, obviously you found a PDF that supposedly written by John Dee concerning it.
That's right.
Moving on. Captain Black. He says, another gem, Mr. Wise. Who is the picture of in that YouTube avatar of yours?
Yeah, I get asked that a couple of times this past few weeks. Goes through stages. And what I say to him, you know, one of the greatest heroes that people don't even know about in Britain, who turned around and said, no, I won't fight for the Jews. I'm not going to fight for Stalin. He knew all about that it was a holy war. His father actually was, I mean, I knew he was high up in the government, but I didn't realise just how high up he was. He was high up in there, and this is probably why Amory knew. Anyway, he left England, went to form the SS over in Germany. Then eventually he ended up getting caught in Italy at the end of the war. They found out who he was. They sent him back. He's 8 minutes in court. He decided that, you know, he had enough. He pleaded guilty. The judge said to him, you know what the penalty is? He said, yeah, I understand. So he went to prison to be hung. And he was hung by Pierpoint. And in Pierpoint's own biography, he says, Johnny Amory was the bravest man I ever hung.
So that was John Amory. I think we did a podcast on him
a while back.
Yeah, people can look up, if they go back through the Truthful Out Radio back catalogue, they will find a podcast dedicated to John Amory, where we talked about him. But a lot of people do ask about that.
People like Churchill get praised to the heavens, who were the real traitors, and are now proving to be the real traitors. And people like John Amory, who were only early 30s, went to his death, but went, you know, willingly, because he didn't want to live in this world, which he knew what was coming, just like, you know, in the bunker.
Wasn't he part Jewish as well?
He could well have been, yeah. I mean, at the end of the day, when he was killed, when he was hung, he was laid on unconsecrated land for quite some time, but his family managed to get him eventually to a place where he could bury him proper. And it's a sad story in a way, because he has been demonized as well, you know, by, obviously, because of his stance. And I don't know if anybody's heard of him, but a true hero in my eyes.
Yeah, and we do get the odd exceptions to the rule, people that are part Jewish that speak up for white people and do all they can to expose the Jews. We had them, as one guy, Pfefferkorn or something. Some of these Converso Jews were the ones that were exposing the Talmud, you know, centuries ago. You know, we have got them to thank for exposing what was in the Talmud, because the church just saw it was the Old Testament.
Yeah.
Oh, you call them honourable ones. I call them quote-unquote good Jews. Okay, we got a next one from Lee Boy. He says, Dennis, is it true that Hitler said that Christianity as the invention of sick brains? I've seen some Hitler video defending Christianity, but what about those phrases where Hitler says that Christianity is the son of Bolshevism? Is the book Hitler's Table Talk true? Do you want to answer that one, or should I say a few bits about that? Because I know that
you can fire away if you like. I mean, my rhetoric on it is well known.
Hey, that's a quote. Whenever you find these quotes that are anti-Christian, they are nearly always from Hitler's Table Talk. And the bits that he talks about. And that was produced after the war. There's nothing to prove that it was actually by Adolf Hitler. And where he talks about Christianity, it's like it's a completely different author speaking about it than the one that was speaking about it in Mein Kampf. I did a program a while back, and looking at one chapter in Mein Kampf, and every other page had a reference to something in the Bible in it, using phraseology and analogies that came directly from the Bible. So that shows that Adolf Hitler was, you know, he knew he had the Bible back to front. He'd read it. He had to know it really well in order to be using the language from it. And in the book, in Table Talk, it's quite obvious that the person that is speaking doesn't know anything about the Bible, doesn't know anything about Christianity or the church. It's like it's an atheist or an antichrist speaking, whereas when you read Mein Kampf, it's somebody who has a deep understanding of Christianity that he's writing. And you would only know that if you were well-versed in the Bible yourself. It's not like Hitler is saying, oh, in the book of John, you know, this is said. He just uses it in everyday language, which shows that he was very, very well acquainted with it. So I would suggest that either all of Table Talk is false, which, you know, there are people that say that you know, there are some very good bits in it. Or maybe it's just the anti-Christian bits that are false. And there are two reasons for that. It could be that Bormann just put in these anti-Christian bits, or it could be that the person that was translating it into English added an anti-Christian slant, because apparently the French version is different, that there are differences between the translations. But I would not take Hitler's Table Talk as given an accurate view of his view on Christianity, because it conflicts with everything else, and it was brought out after he died. And one way we can look at things that are brought out after people have died, is to look at the way the Apocrypha is treated from the Bible. The Apocrypha are the extra books that aren't actually included in the Bible. And where they confirm what is said in the Bible, then they can be taken as expanding upon that. But where they conflict, then it's seen that the Bible has authority and the Apocrypha doesn't. And what we can say is that Mein Kampf has authority, because we know Hitler wrote that. And Table Talk, where it conflicts with anything in Mein Kampf, then we have to say, well, Table Talk is inaccurate in that part, and Mein Kampf is correct. That's the way I'd look at it anyway.
Well, I look at anything after World War II finished, you've got to be dubious about it, because no book, not even anyone who could really could stand up and say positive things about Hitler, because it just wouldn't get aired, you know, or you'd be facing some punishment. So, because he was supposed to say these things privately and secretly, you know, they've used this. I know the reason why they've used it. It's because all the way through World War II, they didn't want the world to know that this was a holy war. So as soon as people find out what Hitler was really fighting for, what all the other countries were fighting for, even the Protestants, the Orthodox Christians, even the Muslims have a God. And so they don't want communism coming along and wiping all the gods out. So Christianity, obviously, Jesus Christ is being wiped out today, as we know. And this would have, the Jews after World War II wanted to continue that agenda. And so the less that people know about that World War II being a holy war, the easier it is for them to continue their quietly getting rid of the white race.
Yeah, it doesn't portray Hitler in a very good light. You know, you're making him out to be an antichrist, making him out to be anti-Slav. I mean, a lot of the nasty things said about him that he said about Slavs come from Table Talks. And David Irving thinks that it's a good representation of Adolf Hitler. But David Irving is looking at it from a historian's point of view. And if somebody is going to be making up something about Hitler, they're going to make it fit in with what happened in history. But David Irving, as far as I'm aware, I mean, he's not a student of Christianity, he doesn't study the Bible, so he wouldn't have picked up on the fact that, there was a glaring inconsistency there with what Hitler was saying in both books. So he wouldn't have picked up on that. So I think that's part of why people give it credibility, is because David Irving does. But he, you know, as I say, it's not David Irving's fault that he didn't pick up on it. It's not something
he studied. Well, anyone that goes against Hitler's speeches and writings over his lifetime, right, if they're saying that Hitler did this because he, for instance, when one of the big excuses is he had to say he was a Christian, otherwise he wouldn't have got voted into power. Well, that's a lot of bunk, because the Weimar Republic wasn't Christian. You know, when Hitler came in, actual facts of the thing is that that was the most Christian government Germany ever had. So everything goes against everything what these pagans are saying, and yet they'll turn around and say he lied for, what, 20-odd years.
Yeah, they're basically saying he was a liar.
Not in Christ.
Yeah, they're basically saying that he was a liar when they say that, which he clearly wasn't. And you've got to look at action and deeds, not words.
Yes. Can I just say this? I found this video, a little video, right? It was only about 30 seconds. And what he's saying here is, and this is probably going up in one of the episodes, future episodes I'm doing, they should not suddenly speak of the great Christianity today. Okay, his mid-speech here. We will defend Christianity. We want to burn out atheism. We want to burn out the phenomena of all of our culture, our theatre, and our literature that we've been put on us for, well, the entire poison that flowed into our life for the last 14 years. He's talking about the Weimar government and all the decadence in Berlin and all this. And he's actually saying that he's going to defend Christianity, but not just on paper. And what did he do? He defended it military-wise.
There's also that clip of Goebbels as well, and he's saying, is it pagan to find everybody jobs? Is it pagan to provide food for everyone? Is it pagan to provide houses? And no, we are a Christian nation. We're a Christian state. You know, there's a...
Exactly.
You know, it's quite a famous clip, that one, but that also puts paid to it as well. I think there's actually a site, an anti-Christian site, that lists all these quotes of Hitler being pro-Christian. There's about 50 quotes on there from various.
But they can't find a speech, though.
Moving on.
Quotes. Anyone can say a quote.
Well, no, this is what I mean. He's got 50 quotes that show Hitler being pro-Christian. And this is a site that's, you know, it's an anti-Christian site that has it. Gareth Bassett, he says, Dennis, what's your opinion of esoteric Hitlerism, e.g. Savitri Devi, Julius Evola, and Miguel Serrano? Do you know much about esoteric Hitlerism and Savitri Devi, or do you want me to cover this one?
Well, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong or not, but I'm taking it, you know, they're talking about, you know, Thule Society and all this kind of carry on, which, if that's what he's meaning, then Hitler already said there was no room in the National Socialist Party for this kind of thing. You know, we're not, you know, we're Christians, and see you later, boys.
Well, this is the thing. Savitri Devi never actually went to Germany during the Third Reich. She never went there until after the war. And she was a follower of Hindu paganism and married to an Indian, although apparently their marriage was celibate. And some of her ideas are interesting, but she's very, very anti-Christian, which I don't think Hitler would have gone along with that. And Miguel Serrano came up with the idea that Hitler was an avatar of Vishnu. And although he did a lot of good work, I mean, you know, he came up with the idea that the other races were created by angels and animals, and that the white race are the only true human beings. And he found a lot of information to confirm this in all the old religious books. But he made a huge mistake in thinking that the modern Jews of today were the Israelites of the Bible. So he was anti-Christian, and it's very anti-Christian ideas. I did a whole series based on, Hitler, the Ultimate Avatar, Miguel Serrano's book, and it's called Aryan Esoterica, and you can find that link to it at the Radio Aryan site, and that goes through his book, pointing out where there are mistakes and pointing out where there is confirmation for what he's saying, but from other sources. But esoteric Hitlerism is, you know, it's paganism, really. It's following.
Yeah.
It's not what Adolf Hitler would have endorsed.
Well, they try and put him with Blavatsky and the Lucy's Trust, and we tried that the other week. And like I said to him, look, I can take you to the Lucy's Trust now. This was round the corner from Buckingham Palace. And, you know, I'll take you to the offices at United Nations. They'll have an office there, you know, and it's all based on Blavatsky and occultism. you know, these were fighting Hitler, or Hitler was fighting these people. You know, I don't believe if you're shutting Freemasons lodges down, Blavatsky's not going to have room in Germany. I know she's not.
You know, one of the things that gets me about this, I mean, when we look at the people that are following these pagan ideas, these Freemasonic ideas, you know, the Kabbalah and all this sort of stuff that sometimes we get nationalists saying that we should be following, the nationalists that follow it don't have any success. And the people that do follow it that have success are people like the European Union, who have pictures of Zeus and Europa outside, Zeus as a bull with Europa on it. And they have images of the Egyptian gods everywhere. The Freemasons have images of Egyptian gods everywhere and all these pagan gods and pagan idols. And they are the ones that are blessed for doing that because they're the ones that are in charge. You know, the nationalists should be following Christianity and then we will be blessed. But if we follow this, you know, we have to look at that and say, well, you know, it's our enemy that has got this correct in following them. It's our enemy that is following the idols, that is following Satanism, and they're rewarded for doing so. When we start following the same things, you know, we are just turning into the enemy.
Exactly.
And we're not rewarded
Pagans
for
just,
it.
Just repeat what the Jews are saying and want to hear. That's, I mean, a pagan said to me, do you not think that the Jews wouldn't have attacked Germany if Germany were obviously pagan? And I said to him, well, the Weimar Republic was pagan. I never saw any Jews attacking you there because they were the Jews in charge.
Well, it's just telling people what they want to hear. The pagans are just being told what they want to hear. They don't like Christianity, so they like it when they're told Christianity is Jewish. But, you know, the truth is hard to bear. You know, the truth is supposed to be painful to hear.
Yeah. And
it's not supposed to, you know, conform to what you think it's going to be. It's going to be the opposite of what you think it's going to be.
I explained to this pagan, you know, about the Christianity thing and saying that Hungary today and Poland, they're trying to save the culture, this Christian culture, because it doesn't matter if you're religious or not. It's like I said on a podcast the other week, that it's nothing to do with religion, really. It's part religious, but people who live under a couple of thousand years of a certain culture, you and I and other people want our grandchildren to still live in this culture that has been so good to us over 2,000 years. So I don't want four wives. I have enough hassle with one wife. So when they're trying to bring in another culture to destroy my culture, which has done us so well for so long, and, you know, the white race itself has risen to the heights that it has, then why do I want another culture to break it all up? It's a Christian culture, and anyone living in it for the past few hundred years, whether religious or not, is actually a Christian because of the way he lives.
Well, I've made this point recently that, you know, the white race was called Christians. They were called the Christians before we were called the white race, and Europe was Christendom. You know, it's the Christian beliefs that have become warped and twisted, and that's been through Jewish infiltration. Well, the next comment here is from Tom Spitzer, and he says, I am quite happy to live with the Jews. Imagine if we had to live under the Islamic boot. That would be much worse. So, worse? Which is worse, Dennis? I think they're both dreadful.
Well, it doesn't really matter which is worse. One is bringing the other one onto us. So he can say that Islamic boots will be worse. But really, you know, they wouldn't be here if it weren't for the Jews. So the Jews, and they're both in it together.
It's the Jews that are the ones that have advocated for more immigration. It's the Jews that advocated for these speech laws. It's Jews that advocate for white people to be replaced and for there to be diversity quotas. And the Mohammedans are the late group to the party, basically. They're just following the same routine, aren't they?
Bolsheviks got there first.
Yeah, they're just saying, Islamophobia, and we must have these groups to combat hate. And they've actually got rabbis in these groups with them. So you've got rabbis and you've got Mohammedans and mullahs working together to try to identify where Muslims are being criticised. And they've always worked together. Jews and Muslims have always worked together. This idea that they are against one another is purely and simply just because of the state of Israel in Palestine, and the Palestinians are mainly Muslim, and so there is support for them throughout the Muslim world. But if you look through history, right from the very start, the Jews have worked very well with the Mohammedans. They opened up the gates. They opened up the gates of Persia and let them in. That's why Iran is now Muslim. They opened up the gates of Spain and let the Arabs into there, and we had to have a reconquista to get rid of them. And each time when the Muslims are running things, they have Jews in all the important positions. And the Christians are the dhimmis, they're the slaves, and they destroy the genetic integrity of the nation. So the pair of them, the Muslims aren't quite as intelligent as the Jews.
You can't separate them, can you? Because he's saying, I'm quite happy to live with the Jews. You know what I mean? Well, he's in for a shock, because when the chip comes in and all the cash, it starts to go through, there's no more money in cash and everyone's controlled by the credit card, he'll soon find out.
It is easier to point out the crimes of the Muslims because that's what people see. They see the Muslim rape gangs, they see the terrorism, and they don't see the Jews engaging in that.
They don't even know they're Jewish.
Nobody really knows that communism was Jewish. They don't realise that it was Jews that were responsible for, all the deaths, hundreds of millions of deaths, or millions of deaths that went on.
That's exactly what they're doing.
Russia.
What they're doing, what they did with communism, what they did with Bolsheviks, is exactly what they're doing with Christianity, to try to keep it under wraps so they can continue this agenda. Because if all the world knew that Christianity was raped and pillaged in World War II by Jew-inspired Bolsheviks, a Jew would be looked on as a different person by this guy in particular.
Well, I think it actually it's 100 million deaths, don't they? They estimate as being from communism.
Yeah. I think that's it. What space of time, though?
Yeah.
They've all been around since early 1900s.
And what about the cruel ways of doing it, starving people to death so that they end up eating human flesh they did in the Ukraine? It's absolutely horrific. Well, the next one is a comment by Muhammad. And I think this is good, this, because it's an example of how the Muslims shill to cover up for other Muslims. And he says, the issue ISIS is too complicated. No one can say that ISIS are agents of the CIA. This is just wrong. If anybody needs some political explanation about ISIS, then he can ask me here about specific political issues in English or German. As an Arab and a Muslim, I have good explanations. And this is the way that Islam works. You have Islamic apologists. You have the terrorism that goes off, or the rape gangs that go off, and then you have Muslims that say, oh, these are bad Muslims. Islam is really a religion of peace. And people go, the government go to the Muslims to find out about this when they should be investigating it themselves. I wouldn't suggest anyone talk to this guy because he is a Muslim. He's going to be a shill for Muslims. Of course he's going to say that ISIS aren't working for the CIA, when we know that that's false. It was the West that sent all those groups into Syria. So that's why I wanted to pick that comment out, because I normally wouldn't pick out a comment by someone non-white.
Well, it says here it's isn't that complicated at all. I mean, I've got Obama saying on communism by the back door, actually saying that we're training them and funding ISIS. He has to retract it later, but the fact is he went out and said it. It's obviously he knows what he's doing. And then the other point, obviously, is the CIA. Well, the CIA, a lot of people think the CIA is a lot of people think the Fed is part of the American government. It's not. The CIA is not. They're individual entities. And obviously the American government give them money, but they're not part of the American government. The CIA is independent. And so consequently, how does he know who their agents are?
Yeah, there's a wealth of information to show the links between the intelligence agencies and militant Islam, going right the way back to the start of the spread of Wahhabism that was supposed to hold the communists at bay. And even the Saudi prince confirmed that one recently, that it was MI6 and the intelligence agencies that helped to spread that originally.
Yeah, I think, what was he called, the guy in America who says, he was doing an interview on Fox, and he says, I don't care. I meet with him every day. McCain.
Yeah, there's pictures of McCain with them.
He met Liam, didn't he?
Yeah, there's pictures of McCain with them.
Yeah.
Okay, next one, free speech. He says, Dennis, what is your take on Switzerland during 1933 to 1945? Why did Hitler not join Switzerland to Germany like he did Austria? Nowadays, it's probably full of international finance and Shabbos-goy one percenters, but at the same time, it does have a switched-on population with less hate speech control, from what I have read and seen. So this is quite a complicated one, isn't it? Well, why didn't Hitler try to join Switzerland up to Germany like the Anschluss with Austria?
Well, I mean, for one, Switzerland didn't come into that equation. The Anschluss is a historic thing with Germany and Austria. But it wasn't something that I'd researched into a lot because obviously it's, to me, it were minor anyway. And I just heard somebody the other day doing a blog, an interview on radio. And as I was listening, he started talking about it. And he actually said, I don't know who the guy was, but he actually said that Germany, because there was no strategic military, no ports or anything like that, that it would have been more trouble than it was worth, to invade that country, get more resistance than he already had from other countries. Well, he didn't need to. He wouldn't gain anything. If anything were going to come together, it would have been after the war were won. So, he just felt like, Norway and other places like that were the places that they had to go for just for strategy.
Yeah, it forgets that the point of going into these other countries was to defend Germany, and Switzerland's right in the middle, surrounded by mountains. And it's not, and it's always been a neutral country as well. Always been neutral.
Right.
And could be trusted to remain neutral. Because of that, I would say. Well, nationalists.
Well, sure, if it were, it would. I'm pretty sure it would, because you did be all the others.
Yeah. And Schmidt was from Switzerland, who we haven't heard from for a while.
Long time there.
Yeah, he's okay, but often people do ask about him, but it would be nice if he came back. But, I think maybe he's got some personal issues. That's why he's not around at the moment. Hopefully he'll come back at some point. Nationalist from Canada says, what is your opinion on the global economic collapse? More specifically, people who predict the collapse of the global economy.
Yeah, I think I answered this on the lines of, I think there are people in the know who obviously make a financial killing out of these crises and are all part of it, really. I think I once heard that the reason that Greece went under financially was to save America, because it should have been America. Because the banks at that time all went bust over there, but they sacrificed Greece for America to stay afloat. It's all the same cabal, I think.
I also think with the system that we have, with usury built into it, it has to crash, because you can't keep building up debt.
Can't pay that debt off, yeah, you're right.
Yeah, eventually it has to crash, which we saw happen a few years back, and now they have quantitative easing and all these other things that they have invented. I do think there are doom mongers that try to profit from this, but, yeah. It will eventually crash unless they do something to prevent it, because it's built into the system that you cannot just have infinite debt. It has to all come apart at some point, and it will do, but yeah. I'm not sure anybody really knows. Gabe says, thank you, Dennis. What do you think of Daryl Bradford Smith?
Well, from what I knew of him, I mean, the bits when I saw him on Donahue and one or two other programs in America where he was trying to emphasize things about the Holocaust not being right, he looked a pretty stand-up guy. I mean, it wasn't particularly charismatic, but he was certainly a stand-up guy, knew his stuff.
We've got another one here, Mohammed again. He says, Dennis, what is your opinion on this organization, the Sovereign Military Hospital Order of St. John of Jerusalem, of Rhodes, and of Malta? Don't know what.
Yeah, I said to him, I says, it's got an organization I'm that familiar with, but it sounds like they wouldn't let me join and I wouldn't want to join it.
I think they came about after the Templars. When the Templars were taken apart, this was an organization that came about after that. It's the same as all the other secret societies, I guess. Well, we've got some more questions here, but we haven't really got the time for them, Dennis. So maybe we'll have a look at them next week. So, thank you very much for coming on today. Thank you very much, listeners, for listening. Yeah. Don't forget, we do require donations to keep the site going, and there is a Bitcoin wallet in the sidebar. We'll be back next Friday with more Truthful Out Radio for you. And, of course, we hope you all do have a good weekend ahead of you.